Hi, I'm Antonia, and I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Micah, and I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Jane, I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Savannah, a student midwife.
Hi, I'm Lucy, and I'm a midwifery support worker.
Hello, my name's Gulbano, and I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Abby, and I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Gemma Murphy. Welcome to our June podcast. It's been a busy month here at the RCM with the launch of the Rebirth Project, which is the focus of this episode. But June also saw the RCM joined by many of our members, plus thousands of healthcare workers, members of the public and other public sector workers who all took to the streets on Saturday, the 18th of June in London at the TUC rally to demand better. In particular, the RCM used the rally and the lead up to the rally to call on the government to deliver a decent deal on pay for midwives and maternity support workers. We're calling for an inflation-busting pay rise and also for the government to urgently address the understaffing issues right across midwifery with solid recruitment and retention plans. That's what we're asking of the government. We will have to wait and see what happens. We are in that interim period where we are waiting for the government to announce the pay deal. You can read more about that and all the campaign essentials on our website, rcm.org.uk. Now to Rebirth we go. The Rebirth Project was a truly collaborative project led by the RCM. So for this episode, I've tried to squeeze in as many voices as possible to learn more about the work of the project team and its outcomes for our members and for all maternity staff. I'll be speaking to a consultant midwife from Wirral, an obstetrician based in Manchester. And here's Maureen Threadwell, co-founder of the Birth Trauma Association.
I think in terms of language, you often find it's the mismatch. So you'll get the woman perhaps who actually, she wants vaginal birth, but she wants an epidural. And she might get a midwife who's saying, come on, you're nearly there, you can do this. Now that midwife is being a lovely, kind person and thinking she's doing the right thing for the woman, but the woman sometimes doesn't feel heard. So it's kind of getting to that relationship where you know you're knowing what wavelength, what views of birth that woman has, so that you can deliver and you aren't pushing her towards what you would think of. You know, a lot of women say, I got the birth the midwife wanted.
Of course, Maureen represented the voice of women and shared their experiences with midwives, obstetricians and other healthcare professionals on the Rebirth Project team. And we will hear more from her later in the episode. But first, let's hear from the RCM's Director of Professional Midwifery, Dr. Mary Ross Davey, and the Rebirth Project Fellow, Dr. Juliet Rement, about how and why the project came about. To be joined by someone who is not a stranger to this podcast, who has been on many episodes. It's Dr. Mary Ross Davey, our Director of Professional Midwifery at the Royal College of Midwives, and Dr. Juliet Rement, who is the Project Research Fellow for our Rebirth Project. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Gemma.
Thank you for taking the time out, because I know this project, along with so many other things that are going on, is all-encompassing. Is that a good word?
Yeah, I think that's a really good description. It's been a really collaborative project where we've done lots of work with lots of different people and organisations.
So before we dive into the project and what's happening and what's to come out of the project and the collaborative work, Mary, I guess starting with you, can you tell me a little bit more about how the Rebirth Project came about and why the RCM chose to lead and bring so many people and organisations together on this?
I think lots of people listening to this podcast will be really aware of some of the negativity that has been in the media and from reports about particular language around birth, particularly around the term normal birth. And that had happened since the Kirkup report in 2015. And so the RCM had been wanting to do work on this and to see what we could do to find out, well, what language does feel right for everyone in the maternity community. So we'd been planning to do it in March 2020, and then something else came down the track. So we were delayed until June 2021 when we set up the project then. So we've been doing it for the last year.
And I guess you're right. The term normal birth is such an, to use the word normal again, it's such a working word that midwives, MSWs and all those working in maternity services use. And actually, if you're not working in maternity services or you're using the service, or if you're a person or a woman along their pregnancy journey, you may not have heard about the word normal birth. You may have only seen it reported in the papers or banded around in the media. Like you said, over the last number of years, there's been quite a lot of media attention around that word and the phrase normal birth.
Yeah, that's right. For midwives, really, the term normal birth feels really comfortable. There's no judgment attached to it. It matches lots of the other language that we use in health just to describe physiological terms. So things like normal blood pressure, normal temperature, normal labour and birth. But then what we have definitely heard over the last few years from a growing number of people is that actually it can have a sense of judgment for some people, that people can feel that if I didn't have a particular type of birth that fits that category of normality, that then I've had an abnormal birth, and that can feel judgmental and difficult. And I think we see it in wider society as well, that there is concern and a shift away from that language of what's a norm, what is normal, and then that sense of those other things then are abnormal. So I think it's part of a kind of wider societal change. And we in maternity have needed over time to always try and listen to the people that we look after and say, you know, is the language we're using right? Is what we're doing right for you? And really hear what people are saying. And that's what the project was seeking to do.
You're right, because the voice of women and those people that use maternity services must be central to the care that's being provided. And we'll talk about that in a little while. But Juliet, as the research project fellow, I'm sure you've had a lot of experience in this field doing such research projects. But was rebirth different in any way to other projects or research that you've worked on before now?
Yeah, absolutely. I've done a lot of research within maternity services, particularly around the organisation of care, about how women access services and about staff and women's experiences of working and birthing there. But I've never worked particularly on language before. And it was something that had come up as a sort of side issue on previous projects, but it wasn't anything that I had really explored in depth. But, you know, all the same issues that come up in previous projects came up in this one. So issues around professional identity and women's information and their choices in birth and their autonomy during labour and the relationships between them and those people that are caring for them. So the same issues were coming up in rebirth as they were before, even though I expected it to be quite different.
So I imagine in the early days when the project team was brought together, there was lots of, I guess, constructive but heated discussions as well in terms of various identities. And was it difficult to come up with a consensus around the wording and the language?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we went out on purpose to invite a project oversight group that were really diverse in their perspectives. We knew they were going to have very different perspectives from each other. We didn't want everybody to agree because this issue is a really tricky issue in lots of ways, not least because people have so many different opinions. And we see that playing out on social media, and we're seeing it playing out in everyday chat around the term normal birth and also all the other terms around labour and birth. And labour and birth is, of course, so personal. And so it became quite apparent quite quickly, I suppose, in the early parts of the project, when we were doing the very open discussions with people who were participating in the project, that a consensus over, say, one particular term was either going to be impossible or very difficult. And we really had to listen to what people were saying to work out how to navigate ourselves through this problem. So, and it's also involved a lot of reflection by Mary and I think, as well, about our own positions in this issue, and to put those aside a lot of the time and to be challenged on those, and to think reflectively as well about our own birth experiences. And that's come into it, and the way that language is used to us as well as service users. So it's been really interesting personally as well as professionally.
Yeah, it does sound really interesting. You've mentioned listening about three times just in that response to me. And Mary, we talked about how important it is to listen to women and those using maternity services. So I guess the project did begin in listening mode with the development of listening groups. What came out of those groups initially?
Yeah, that's right. This project, is really unique in what we've done. So the way that we've done it is quite a staged process. And we started with these listening groups because we felt it was really important that people weren't just talking to us about their established views that they had already about this topic. What we wanted was to set up mixed groups of different professionals with women and service users to talk to us about their feelings and views, but also to get the opportunity to actually hear different perspectives and to listen to other people's perspectives. Because on social media and those kind of channels, that isn't what happens. You don't get to really listen and then understand and then maybe move your perspective on. I think the other way this is unique is that we didn't just set this up to listen to women and service users. We wanted to really listen to the health professionals as well, because it's really important that we as health professionals have language that feels right for us and does what we need it to do. So this is unique in listening to the whole of the maternity community.
As part of that listening, sorry, as you're talking, I'm remembering back to our annual conference last year, which of course was virtual. We're back to real life this year. And I was watching your session from home when I was working. And you had this word cloud, is that right? Where members, those who had joined the conference, could basically describe what they thought was like a good birth, or a word to describe a good birth, or a positive word that was associated with birth. And I thought that was great, the way it all kind of flooded through everyone's thoughts.
Yeah, that was a really nice aspect of the project, actually, because I think what had come across in some of the discussions that we had in the listening groups and the earlier discussions we had with the project oversight group about why we were doing the project was that it had come across that some women and service users felt that maternity services had a preference for one type of birth, or they hoped particularly that women would have a particular type of birth. And what we wanted to be able to do is say, actually, maternity care providers, midwives and obstetricians, this is what we hope for women when they come through our service. So what we're really wanting is for women and people to feel these things after their birth. And that was what we did with the word cloud. So at every listening group, we asked the health professionals to say, well, what one word would you like women to say or feel about their birth experience when they've come through your care? And that's when we got the word cloud with empowering, right, emblazoned in the middle, and and positive and safe. You know, it's really lovely to see, I think.
Yeah, it was a great idea. It was a really good way to engage people as well with their own thoughts. Okay, so we had the listening groups, and then that moved on, Juliet, to the Voices survey, which was quite a large survey and a huge response rate. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so the Voices survey was the first survey that we carried out. We ended up doing two. And the motivation for doing that was that when we set up the listening groups, they had to be by nature quite small. We had to have a small group of people so that they could really have those complex, intricate debates and have the space to be able to listen to each other. But then that meant that there were loads of people who didn't get into listening groups and weren't able to have those conversations. So we wanted to give a chance for them to share their stories as well. So the Voices survey was set up as an online survey, and it had a number of questions that mirrored those in the listening group. So we're very similar, very open questions. And we allow people to respond to the survey using their voice. Yeah. So we now have a lovely set of recordings, very intimate recordings of people telling their stories onto their phones or into their computers. And those became part of the wider data set, and they were part of the sort of the qualitative work that we did, the work we were doing, that focusing on stories and on listening.
Sorry to interrupt. Can you give me an example of one of the questions that someone would have responded to on the survey?
Yeah, sure. We asked people how they would describe their labours and births and why. So that was one of the main questions for service users. And then they talked about, and then we asked them again about whether they would use different language depending on who they were talking to. So there was another question about that. Yeah. We asked them within that survey to rank their preferred terms. So we were going back to that list of terms that were the synonyms for normal birth. And then we asked them to give a little bit of reason why they had chosen those terms. So it wasn't just asking them to kind of tick boxes and rank. We also wanted to hear a little bit about their thoughts around those words as well.
Brilliant. Actually, I love the use of technology. Again, I'm a real fan, and you'd never guess it because I do talk a lot of using voice notes, because it does save quite a lot of time, doesn't it? And like you said, then you have this really nice recording of someone and they've honestly been able to say something in their own voice, as opposed to writing it, which often takes longer or the message gets misconstrued.
That's right. We wanted to make it really as accessible as possible to everybody. And for people who've got busy lives and they've got tiny children and maybe they're, you know, feeding a baby whilst they're filling in the survey, we wanted them to be able to do it with one hand. So that was really one of the key motivations for using that technology to be able to respond with their voices.
Yeah, it's just brilliant use of technology. Okay, so this podcast obviously was recorded prior to the publication of the Rebirth report. So what's next? Now the report is out, what's next, Mary?
So we've got a range of different things that are coming out to support people in the maternity community to really spread the word about the project and what the findings were. So one of the things that we're producing is a conversation starter guide, because one of the key findings really that we came out of the listening groups and voices survey with is that women wanted us to ask them, what's the right language for you to talk about birth? What's the language that you'd like to describe your previous birth experience? And then to really try and personalize care to what's important for that particular woman. So that was one of the key findings. So the conversation starter just helps midwives and obstetricians just think about, well, how can I have that kind of open conversation with women about their previous birth experiences or what they hope for from their first birth experience, rather than putting onto them the language. So not saying things like, oh, I see you had a perfectly straightforward birth last time, without actually asking them how it felt for them. So that's one of the first stages. We're also producing a really brief summary of what we heard and what we found, and then what the preferences were in terms of language. And really the overarching preference was to say, let's talk about birth. Whatever the type of birth that people have, let's celebrate it as a birth. So whether that's a vaginal birth or a cesarean birth. And then beneath that, let's be really quite accurate and not to have any kind of value-laden descriptions when we're talking about what's happened during those different labours and births. And so that's really the categories, if you like, that have come out of the final survey.
And you mentioned personalised care, and there'll be so many midwives listening that are doing their best to deliver personalised care all the time. And like you say, some women or people using maternity services might be fine with the term normal birth, others may not be. So it's about listening. And I guess what we need to do is ensure we have enough midwives, because there is an acute shortage in England. So there are enough midwives to deliver that safe, personalised care, and they've got time with women. So that's brilliant. So we're going to have this conversation starter tool that midwives can use. So it's been like, I'm going to call it a labour of love. It's been a very in-depth project. It's been a very brave project, in my opinion, to take on, because it's been quite a contentious issue, this word and the language around birth. Ultimately, a question for you both. What do you hope will be achieved by the report's findings? And what do you hope midwives and MSWs and those working in maternity service, all those working maternity services, obstetricians and others, will take from this work?
I think this is an opportunity to hear the voices of women and birthing people around this issue, and of health professionals too. And, you know, there's a lot of language that we use in maternity services that we don't think about very much, because people are using them every day, every moment of every day. And this is a moment to stop and reflect on the impact of those language. And if there's nothing we've learned more, it's that feelings around birth are as diverse as birth themselves. And so the things that you might expect somebody feels about a birth because of what it appears happened to them may be completely different. And I know that every midwife knows this. This is nothing new. But it's a moment to really stop and think about how the language that we use has an impact on people's experiences when they're actually coming through services, and what the maternity services as a whole wants for people who are coming through and having their labours and births with us.
Okay, and Mary?
Yeah, what I hope from this project is that people will see that we've been through a really careful, staged process. And I think it is a good example that services can use as well, about making sure that they set about really listening to all the different groups of people that are involved and have a stake in the quality of maternity services. So I think for me, it's then people thinking, right, well, you know, there has been a really good, rigorous process here. So let's really listen to the findings here. And for me, those findings are really personalize your language and care. Understand that the words that we use as health professionals that may feel harmless for us may well not be harmless for the women in our care. And then, yes, we do need to note things down and put them in audit. So we have got some suggested terms from this project that all of the maternity community have said, yeah, these terms aren't all perfect for everyone, but they feel the best fit at the moment for the language to describe different types of labours and births. So lots of different hopes, I think. But we know it takes a long time for things to change in services, for people to get used to doing things in a different way and saying things in a different way. So this will take time and effort for everyone to take on board.
Yeah, and I guess it just begins with one action, doesn't it? Someone in the team taking an interest that has the time and bringing it back into their team meeting or a staff room, and then that ignites the spark and the conversation for change.
Absolutely.
Thank you both for your time. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you.
It's been lovely as ever.
And soon after this interview, Mary Ross Davey moved on from her role at the Royal College of Midwives. So a big thank you to Mary for her contribution, not only to this episode, but to many others in the series, including our most recent Ockingdon Review podcast. It's been fantastic working with Mary, and we wish you all the best in the future. Now, if you are interested in how the Rebirth Project can help support you in your day-to-day practice and role, later on in this episode, I'll be speaking to midwife, in fact, consultant midwife, Angela Kerrigan, about the Rebirth Conversation Starter Toolkit that's now available to all RCM members and all those working in maternity services. I'm really happy this morning to be joined by Maureen Treadwell, who's the co-founder of the Birth Trauma Association. How are you, Maureen?
I'm very well, thank you, and I hope you are too.
I am. Well, the sun is shining today, which is always a good thing. Maureen, first of all, you are the co-founder of the British Trauma Association. Can you tell those listening who may not have heard of you and what the BTA does a little bit more about it?
Okay. So I've actually been involved in this area for about 40 years.
Wow.
So it was a sort of 20 years into this that I met Dr. Debbie Sayers, and we talked about maternity services and how a lot of it revolved around women not being heard, not being listened to, quite a few complaints and general unhappiness. And we felt that there was a need for support for families who'd suffered really traumatic experiences during birth, which kind of at the time societally wasn't being recognized. This was supposed to be a joyous event. People were supposed to be happy. And yet we were meeting all these people who were really seriously unhappy, traumatized, actually suffering from PTSD, which at the time was denied. People said you cannot have PTSD following birth because birth is a normal event.
Yeah, so the way you're speaking, you know, going back, you know, a couple of decades, it's almost like something that was brushed under the carpet and was shushed and shouldn't be spoken about.
Yes, you put it in a nutshell. Exactly, exactly. And I think we've moved on from that, and I'm really pleased that we have. And it's now accepted that a lot of women do have really traumatic experiences, and so do their partners and families. They are also affected. It's not just, it's the whole family that can be affected by it. So we felt there was a need for sort of several areas. One was support for families. One was research and awareness raising of the actual problem. And I suppose beyond that, general issues, where to get information, where to get advice, who to go to, I want my notes. So that kind of just more, so I suppose, more mundane information providing around the issues. And there are three areas that we deal with. But we're primarily, I would say, primarily now support.
Yeah, and I guess the last point that you made about giving people information about where they can ask questions, and that's really about empowering women, isn't it? And that's probably a really important step if you're having your first child or you've never used maternity services before, that you know how to ask the right questions.
Yes.
And what you can ask in order to have the experience that you deserve as a woman or a person using maternity services.
Yes, and I completely agree. And I think we've started to get away from the swings. Because, you know, there was this terrible swing, I think it was in the 50s and 60s, of very medicalized care. And then it swung, oh, everything's got to be normal and natural and everything else. And now I think we're reaching the right position, which is, hang on a minute, individual women have different views.
Yeah.
On what we need is this sort of service that listens to what that individual woman wants, as opposed to what the service is going to deliver because it's better for women.
Yeah, and you're right, it's like the happy place. It's probably the best middle ground for a long time, because I think a lot of the work that the RCM is doing currently and has been doing over the last number of years is about informing midwives, you know, supporting them to deliver personalised care.
Yes.
which involves allowing women to have their own choice when it comes to type of birth and place of birth.
Yes.
And I guess moving on to the language, which is the whole crux and what the whole Rebirth Project was about, is language is part of that. And language really does have an impact on women's experiences and maybe trauma that they experience during maternity care.
It absolutely does. And we hear both terrible things and fantastic things about the care that women receive. So, I mean, where do I start? Do I start with it? I'll start with the terrible things, because actually I sometimes think the terrible things makes people feel good because they think we would never do that.
To be fair, prior to this interview, I did ask you for some examples, and I'm sure you have hundreds of examples of where things went really well and where things went really wrong, because actually it's often only by hearing about what went wrong that people learn, and we all learn.
Exactly. Yeah.
So fire away.
I would say one of the commonest things is the maternity service not being in line, or sort of the service that is being delivered not being responsive to the individual woman. So bear in mind, you can get a woman, obviously, whose ideal birth is in the garden in a pool with no interventions, or you can get a woman who wants an elective cesarean. And we know from the research that the closer a birth is to what the woman's ideal was, the less likely she is to be traumatized by it, which kind of makes sense. You know, maybe you didn't need a research project to work that one out, but that's how it goes. So I think in terms of language, you often find it's the mismatch. So you'll get the woman perhaps who actually, she wants vaginal birth, but she wants an epidural. And she might get a midwife who's saying, come on, you're nearly there, you can do this. Now, that midwife is being a lovely, kind person and thinking she's doing the right thing for the woman, but the woman sometimes doesn't feel heard. So it's kind of getting to that relationship where you know, you're knowing what wavelength, what views of birth that woman has, so that you can deliver and you aren't pushing her towards what you would think of. You know, a lot of women say, I got the birth the midwife wanted, not the birth I wanted. Yeah. And so that's really important. And I think it's done in a very well-meaning way. I don't think people are being cruel or unkind when they do it. They just have their own view of what is best and what they would like. And it's like all of us, isn't it? It's so difficult to jump out of that and put yourself in someone else's shoes who's got a completely different view of things.
Yeah, well, each individual has their own, I guess, concept or view about what is perfect or what's good or what's positive. And like you said, midwives may not know that they're causing any trauma by the way they're speaking to someone. And I guess that's allowing, again, talking about having enough midwives, that they have enough time to get to know the women they're caring for.
We're on the same wavelength there.
Yeah, and then they can personalise that care, and then that avoids situations like this happening and women going away feeling like they were talked to as opposed to talked with.
Yes, and more importantly, not heard. I would say the commonest theme, if you dig down into the themes where trauma has resulted, it's that not feeling heard.
Yeah.
That is so much at the root of so much trauma.
Yeah, I can only imagine. So the Rebirth Project was, a year-long commitment, really, a hell of a commitment for many people who were very busy. And it was ultimately a collaboration between many professionals, including yourself. How did you find it? And obviously your place on the group was to bring that, that experience you have hearing women's stories. You were bringing that to the group of professionals. How did you find that?
I found it really refreshing because the project was led so brilliantly and there was a real drive not to go in with an agenda, but to draw in every perspective. And that was just wonderful because that has not happened in the past. That has really not happened.
So what I'm hearing from you was it was truly collaborative and everybody had a voice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's so important, isn't it?
big time. There's lots of things that have come out of the project, you know, so we have the publication of the report, we have tools and guidance for midwives to start conversations with women. From your point of view and from the women that you support, how will this help them, or how will you discuss this with them going forward?
I think with women, there's this kind of feeling it's not just words, it's what drove those words. What were the set of values behind those words? And it's that absolute acceptance that a woman's choice, whatever it is, providing it's informed, and that's really important, it's got to be informed choice, that should be respected. And there is now, I think, there's a consensus now around that, and language exemplifies that. And that consensus was not there 20 years ago.
And that's something that's really positive. I mean, we're both smiling, talking at each other. I know people are listening. But that's a really positive outcome. And yeah, particularly because it's between a variety of professions. It's multidisciplinary, because there was obstetricians on the group, you know, there's midwives. Yeah. They're agreeing that language is really important. And that's something to be celebrated, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, if you get language right, and if you feel that you are expressing things in the right way, it also makes you reflect on the values that underpin those that language. And I think that's almost the really big issue. Words are driven by the values people hold. And if it's genuinely woman-centered, then before you even say anything, you will have got feedback. You'll have had that listening. And it's that listening, taking in where the woman is before you even say your first word, other than hi, how are you, and a smile, I think, which is in the NICE guidelines.
Okay, on that note, Maureen, thank you so much for your time.
That's a pleasure.
It's been really enjoyable talking to you.
And you, Gemma. Thank you so much. Take care.
And I'm joined this afternoon by obstetrician Alex Heasel from Manchester, who's also a professor of obstetrics and the director of the Tommy's Stillbirth Research Centre. How are you, Alex?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Now, of course, you are part of the Rebirth Oversight Project Group because of your professional role as an obstetrician. And can I ask you, in your own experience and that of your colleagues' experience, how important is the language that you and your colleagues are using when you're caring for women during pregnancy and labour and birth?
I think the language that we use is really important. I think birth is such a significant event in a woman's life and a family's experience, that the language that we use can really alter people's perception of what's happened to them. And also it's carried with them going forward. So, for example, just using the words emergency to describe a cesarean section can convey a whole series of emotions that sometimes we forget as professionals, because it's part of our everyday language and discourse, but those can carry really different and important meanings for women and their families.
Do you think there's an element of time as well? So you can talk, you know, professional to professional, you know, in a multidisciplinary team, in the language that you've trained to use and what's medically the right words to use. But then, do you find that you need a lot more time or to talk to women and maybe translate that into more everyday common language or explain what's actually happening?
I think that's true in some cases, but actually most of the language that we could use in when we provide respectful maternity care needs to be woman-centred. And it's really, I think it's important to use both when we're talking to parents, but also when professionals are talking to each other, so that we're conveying respectful care all the way through someone's patient journey. So I do think sometimes it takes time, particularly if we're, for example, talking to a woman about a complicated birth or where something's not gone to plan. Yes, that can take time, but actually I think using language is appropriate for women doesn't necessarily have to take lots more time for us as professionals.
Yeah, that's a really good point. When you're talking about that and you're comparing it to the question I asked you around time, I guess it's a bit like kindness. You don't need a lot of time to be kind. You can be kind in quite a brief amount of time.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good analogy. And language matters. The way that we describe something, language matters because it conveys meaning, as does our nonverbal behaviour and language. So I think, you know, it's really important if we're providing respectful, holistic care that that's conveyed by the words that we use as well as our actions.
Absolutely. Alex, how did you find working in such a, I guess it was a large collaborative group of professionals and those representing women who use maternity services. How did you find that over the past year?
I found it a really great experience. And I think to be part of a group like that is always educational. It's always great to hear different people's views and the diversity of views and experiences from different professional backgrounds, but also from stakeholders. And I think it's exciting because it gives us an opportunity to think about the topic, and in this case, the language we use to describe labour and birth, and to try and reach a consensus to take forward. And I think it's what has been particularly nice is that in this group, people were able to talk honestly and people's opinions were valued. And, you know, I think that gives strength to what we've produced.
You know, I've spoken to a couple of people for this podcast and they've also said, use the word honest, that you're able to be, you know, professionally honest. And actually, isn't that such a great starting point to find a consensus on something? So you just mentioned the future and going forward. What are your hopes for the outcomes of the project and its dissemination amongst your colleagues and midwives and other maternity staff?
I think my main hope is that this gives us a really good basis to think about the language that we use with women and families to describe birth, and both when we're talking about birth to women who haven't yet given birth, so they're currently pregnant, or when we're talking to them about the birth experience that they've had, that it gives us some new tools that we know have been developed with really good input from service users, from stakeholders and from professionals. And I think we learned that different people have different opinions, and actually what we need to do is to have that conversation with women on an individual basis. So I guess what I really hope is it's another tool in our ability to deliver individualized maternity care.
And that's what it's all about. I mean, that is what ultimately everybody working in maternity service is hoping to achieve, that personalized journey, you know, that individual care, like you mentioned. Alex, I know you're exceptionally busy, so I really appreciate your time, and a massive thank you for all you do for the women and the people in your care.
Thanks ever so much, Gemma.
Joined by Dr. Angela Kerrigan, a consultant midwife from Wirral University Teaching Hospitals. How are you, Angela?
I'm fine, thank you, Gemma.
I guess you're busy at the moment. How's everything in Wirral with your colleagues, and how's the workflow going for you?
Busy, same as everywhere, really. Very, very busy. Lots of changes going on, lots of pressure, but that's just the nature of the job, isn't it? And I think we're all just getting on, yeah. So no different to anywhere else, but keeping our heads up and keeping going.
I know from talking to so many midwives, it's just not easy at the moment with understaffing. So it's nice to hear your positive thoughts in even if times are difficult. Now, you were involved in the Rebirth project as a consultant midwife. How important was the project, I guess, for you and to be involved in it from the very initial stages?
It was really exciting, actually. So my role as consultant midwife, it obviously is here on Wirral, but I was part of the Rebirth Project Oversight Group as representing the National Consultant Midwife Forum. So nominated myself to be a representative for that group, and I was very excited to have been chosen as that sort of representative, which was really great. I think to be the voice of midwives, to be the voice of consultant midwives, obviously we're very passionate about labour and birth. And I think having a midwifery voice on there, and I know I wasn't alone in that group as a midwifery voice, but with different sort of areas that we all sort of came from, different experience, it was really useful to be able to bring my own experience in my role as consultant midwife to that group. Labour and birth is what we do on a daily basis, and I know for a number of consultant midwives, the term normal birth is actually in their job titles and very heavily in their job descriptions. So quite a bit of anxiety about how that would impact on that. So it was really important to represent that group and feed into this project.
And it's the language, isn't it? There's been a lot of discussion, I guess, out there in the public sphere and in the media about the term normal birth and the pursuit for normal birth. But like you mentioned, it is ingrained and within the job description of many of your peers and other midwives across the UK.
Yes, it is. And it's not to say that normal birth will be eroded, but I think the terminology and the language that we use is really timely that this project has been done, and it's been done so inclusively. And it's not to say that actually we're going to erode the process of normal birth. It's just the language we use that surrounds that. And I think that needs to be acknowledged as well, that, you know, the importance of that language that we use to be inclusive, to be sensitive to both colleagues, professionals, and also our service users, who are the main ones that obviously we're going to be talking to on a daily basis and using this language with.
Yeah, and I guess it's all about, you know, I was talking to Maureen Treadwell earlier from the Birth Trauma Association, and I guess it's all about just personalising the care. So normal birth and using the term normal birth with some women or people that you're caring for might not be offensive or traumatic to them, but it could be for other women. So I guess it's about having that all important time, which is so precious to midwives these days, because there simply aren't enough of you, having that time, isn't it, to get to know the woman that you're caring for and have those conversations and being able to personalise the language that you're using as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's a key role for a consultant midwife, is working with women, birthing people, service users who have very strong feelings about the terminology or the process of birth, and those who don't. And it's gauging that. And as you say, it's that time to spend to have that conversation and work out how you phrase things, how you pitch things to people. And you can very easily get that sometimes from talking to people, and you can adjust your language based on that, but sometimes it's not quite so easy to see how that language is making people feel. So it's just exploring those feelings and having that sort of sensible, open, inclusive discussion, but on a very individual basis.
Yeah. And part of the work and the output of the project group was to develop kind of tools and guidance that midwives could use practically in practice day to day when they're caring for women and other people using maternity services. And one of those was a conversation starter tool.
So this is really interesting, actually, and I think will be very, very useful. And people will probably use it in a number of different ways, depending on who they're talking to, what their role is, and what their input into the care is at that point. But it's a tool that's it's in five stages. So it's looking at how to start the conversation and how to proceed with the conversation around a previous birth experience. So it's starting with acknowledging that woman, that birthing person's experience previously, if they've had a previous birth, irrespective of the mode of birth, how that birth went. It's acknowledging that happened, but also finding out how it's acceptable for you to talk about that. You know, what terminology do they prefer? I've spoken to lots of women in the past who've said they had a normal birth, but actually they had a birth with forceps, but they still class that as a normal birth because it was a vaginal birth. And that's okay. If they're okay with that, that's okay. Some people aren't as okay with that, and they want to be very explicit about how things went. But again, it's just finding out from the woman, the birthing person that you're speaking to, how they wish that language to be used, and then moving on to sort of affirm and confirm that with them so that you pitch the tone correctly and you're on the same level. Very important to avoid assumptions as well. You know, what we perceive to be straightforward may not have been perceived as straightforward. What we perceive to have been particularly traumatic, that it may not have been that way. And I think not imposing your own views on that on that person that you're talking to is key, really, because you can make them reconsider their experience at that point, which can be detrimental. And then if I finishing that with annotation, like document it in the notes, the conversation you've had, the experience that they felt they had, and their preferences moving forward. And I think then you have a very much an agreed way for that particular person, that service user who will want that birth discussed with service users. There's nothing more frustrating than having the same conversation over and over and over again with different health professionals. So I think although we're individualizing it, you're making it very clear how that person would want to have their birth experience discussed and referred to.
And it does sound, as you're describing the five steps and stages, it does sound quite practical and something that could be timely if it's needed to take time, but also could be done quite quickly. If what I'm thinking of when you're talking about it, if you're at an antenatal appointment and you're discussing your birth plan with your midwife, is this the time that midwives could do something like this? It's almost something that should be done in sync potentially with the birth plan at the beginning of the care pathway.
Yeah, I mean, this will be a conversation that will be revisited numerous times. But yeah, early on in pregnancy, when getting a full history, it would be timely to do it at that point. Then it could be revisited. We're doing continuous risk assessments throughout pregnancy, whether or not you like that terminology or not. That's what we're doing. And it could be to do that repeatedly. It would take time initially, but actually the more we have these conversations, the more practiced we as health professionals get used to having these sort of slightly longer conversations, the easier they will get. I think different people will go into different detail as we're talking. Consult midwives probably have a little bit longer and will go into a lot more depth than midwives would do as such, because they wouldn't have the time and it may not be as relevant. But it's definitely a useful tool. And I think for me, it very much challenged my own thinking about the conversations I have on a day-to-day basis currently. And it's definitely something I would utilise in my own practice, in my own role as consultant midwife, that I would now use when having those more in-depth conversations. And I think without having my experience in the Rebirth Project, I don't know whether it would have challenged me at this point. So it's really been quite a good learning experience for myself as well, actually.
That's really interesting. And I guess, I mean, there are various ways that the RCM is going to communicate the findings of this project, the tools, the guidance. But in terms, like you said, for your own work and within your own workplace in the Wirral, I guess that you're going to be doing a little bit of promotion of this conversation starter tool yourself amongst your own team.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know there's going to be some national promotion of it, and which I will share in my own like sort of social media platforms. But I think once it's finalized and launched, you absolutely share it amongst, obviously, and this has been a really obvious thing to say, but amongst multidisciplinary colleagues as well. It isn't just a midwifery tool for a midwifery conversation. You know, this is applicable to anyone who comes into contact with a pregnant woman or a birthing person or any service user postnatal or, you know, whatever point they're at. And I think whether it be an obstetrician, an MSW, a midwife, even an anaesthetist could have similar conversations, because we're looking at management of pain during labour and that kind of thing. And I think they may well pick up on aspects of this, but it's a tool that can be easily utilised by, you know, a whole host of multidisciplinary colleagues. So yes, definitely on a local level, sharing it and encouraging its implementation and use in practice. Yeah.
Thanks, Angela. That's such a good point about this is valid and totally usable for all maternity staff that come into contact with women. What an excellent point. Thank you so much for your time today. I know you're busy, a very busy consultant midwife, so I'll leave you go back to work. But thank you, Angela. That's all for this month. A big thank you to all my guests. I hope you enjoyed listening to just a small selection of the members of the RCM's Rebirth Project Oversight Group. There were so many, and everybody's voice was absolutely heard in this project. All the details, all the information about the toolkit and what you need to put this into practice on our website, rcm.org.uk. Next month, we turn our attention for July's episode to the Caring for You campaign. Chronic staffing shortages, unrelenting workloads, extended shifts, missed breaks, all of this is having grave implications for midwives and maternity support workers. The RCM is only too aware of the mental and physical stress and strain that understaffing is putting on our members.
So the Caring for You campaign has been refreshed, placing the onus back into the hands of the employers, holding them to account for the health, safety and well-being of all RCM members. You can hear more about the Caring for You refresh in our July episode next month. Until then, thank you for listening and take care.